Hi, my name's Paul Baines. I'm Professor of Political Marketing at the University of Leicester and co-author of Marketing 5th Edition by Oxford University Press with Chris Phil, Sarah Rosengren and Paolo Antonetti. This is the podcast for Chapter 5, Marketing Strategy. In this podcast, we describe the strategic marketing planning process. We analyse current conditions and talk about how to formulate marketing strategies. We explain the different types of strategic marketing goal and associated growth strategies. We describe the concepts associated with strategic marketing action. And we talk about marketing implementation and the key elements of a strategic plan. Okay, so just to kick off, the strategic context really for a firm is about understanding what resources and capabilities a firm actually has, looking at who its competition is, looking at the external environment to see what's going on in the external environment, and then looking at who the target customers are. And all these are, if you like, mixed together to understand what the nature of the market is and how to respond to it. It's important for a firm to have a values statement to outline how it should go about achieving its goals, to have a vision statement which sets out the organisation's future, and to have a mission statement which sets out the organisation's purpose, if you like. There are 10 steps broadly in strategic marketing planning, and those 10 steps are as follows. In the first step, the organisation sets out its overall mission, vision and values at the corporate level, as I've mentioned. The second step is to develop measurable corporate goals and to establish how those apply to the whole organisation. In the third step, you undertake a marketing audit, which explores the external situation in which the market intends to operate and the resources available to be used. In the fourth stage, a SWOT analysis is undertaken to explore the organisation's competitive position and how external factors are impacting on the organisation. In the fifth, you'd outline the key assumptions that the organisation is undertaking, which helps planners understand the base on which the plan is to be developed. Sixth step is to develop marketing objectives and strategies and to formulate those in such a way that it outlines what you're actually going to do. That's usually achieved via Ansoff's matrix, which we looked at in the fourth chapter. And in the seventh step, we would look at the marketplace outcomes likely as a result of implementing the plan. So we try and work out, you know, what are the likely, what's the likely results of what we're doing. We would then develop a set of alternative marketing mixes, not just one, in order to achieve what we've said we would achieve. So that's the four P's that we discussed in chapter one, or seven P's if it's a service. And the reason we develop alternatives is to try to identify the best marketing mix possible. In other words, to optimise the marketing mix. Dependent on the size of the organisation, the range of SBUs and their offerings is determined, and a marketing budget and other resources are allocated to help and support each one. And finally, in the 10th stage, each business and or offering develops a detailed functional and competitive strategy outline and plan, such as a one-year implementation plan. That plan's implemented, the results are measured, and then that's used to feed back into the next planning cycle. And that's the process, according to Malcolm McDonald, a guru of strategic marketing planning at Cranfield University, now emeritus professor at Cranfield University. So you can also see strategic marketing planning as a three-stage process. You can see it as strategic market analysis, strategic marketing goal setting, and strategic marketing action. In this kind of first stage, then it's about undertaking SWOT analysis, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities and threats analysis. One of the problems that that many students have when they develop a SWOT analysis is that they tend to not look at SWOT properly. SWOT, the SW component, is strengths and weaknesses. And usually those should be strengths and weaknesses against the competition, relative to the competition. So, for example, in the pharmaceutical market, having a strong, say, development capability is only true if that's illustrated in the marketplace, in particular statistics. So, for example, if you wanted to say, you know, GlaxoSmithKline has a stronger drug development capability than AstraZeneca, then perhaps you would show that by showing that R&D spend at GSK is higher than that at AstraZeneca. Assuming it is, I've just made that up as an example. So it's often useful to evidence the points that you make in a SWOT. So that's SW. OT, the OT component, is opportunities and threats. And they must be external to the organisation. So it's only an opportunity or a threat if it's external to the organisation. And I often see students at all levels, actually, undergraduate, postgraduate and post-experience, coming up with a SWOT where those ideas are violated. You know, either the opportunities and threats are not external, or the strengths and weaknesses are not really relative to the competition, or not properly considered relative to the competition. So it's important to do that. In the goal setting phase, then you're looking at several types of five key types of objectives, really. They can be niche objectives where that's often suitable for firms operating in a market dominated by a very large competitor. It's not really economic to take on the lead competitors because, you know, they've got far more resources than you have. So what you try and do is develop a highly differentiated product for a component of the market, for a sub-segment, if you like. And that then helps you to compete much better. Other goals are to hold a niche. You might hold a niche if you're the market leader, for example. The thing then is to defend your position within that niche, your market share. You might harvest a niche, which means really that you try to develop your position within that niche. And that's often undertaken in mature markets. You try and ensure that you... It's a bit like hold, but it's usually used in mature markets. And what you're trying to do really is ensure that you pull as much of profit out of that market as possible, hence why it's called harvest. So the market is in a decline phase. Probably competitors are so-called shaking out of the market, and that means they're leaving the market. And what you try and do is maximise short-term profits and stimulate positive cash flow. You do that by stripping out marketing communication and research and development spend. So that's harvest. So we've talked about niche, hold and harvest. The other two are growth and divest. Well, in a growth strategy, what you're really trying to do is build up your market share. You're probably developing your products more. You're communicating them more than competitors, hopefully, if you're going to succeed in that particular goal. With divest, you're no longer interested in... You may be starting to incur losses, generating negative cash flows. And so what you're doing is really coming out of that market as cheaply as possible. This usually happens after you've undertaken a harvesting strategy in a declining market. And the idea is that you use the money that you would have used for that particular market in a new market, perhaps with a new product or service. It's important that when we're developing strategy to look at... one of the points we were talking about was developing marketing strategies, and I think that was the fifth stage. And we usually do that through Ansoff's Matrix, as I've mentioned. Ansoff's Matrix really looks at four different possibilities. It looks at markets and products, products in the wider sense of products and services, really, propositions we use in the textbook. And so you can develop new products in existing markets, which is product development, or present existing products in current markets, which is market penetration. Market penetration is achieved through one aspect of the marketing mix, through manipulating one aspect. So you might price differently, or you might price slightly lower, perhaps. You might promote more. You might build distribution channels. Or any of those three elements help you penetrate the market. Or you might have a current product in a new market, which is market development. That's when you move to a new geographic market. Or you might have a new product in a new market, which is diversification. Diversification can either be horizontal, so you could take over a competitor if you want. That would help you diversify. Or you might diversify vertically, which is up or down. You might take over one of your customers, or you might take over one of your suppliers. Any of those is known as diversification. And so those are different possible strategies in a market. And Ansoff's Matrix is incredibly useful to determine how to grow in any particular market. I mean, there are a variety of ways in which we might undertake strategic marketing action. This is really looking at the nature of our competitive advantage. What kind of competitive advantage do we actually have? Is it based on cost? Do we have cost leadership, for example? So Michael Porter came up with three possible ways of so-called generic strategies for competing in the marketplace. He said these were cost leadership. So if you produced at a lower cost than everybody else, then you could either charge less, thereby penetrating the market, presumably more strongly, or charge a similar amount as everybody else but take more profit. That's cost leadership. Differentiation would be building a better product, so a product that everybody, or proposition that everybody thinks is market leading. And the other approach, which could work with either cost leadership or differentiation, is focus. So you might have cost leadership focus, where you just focus on a small niche, but you actually are the cost leader in that area, or you differentiate massively in a niche, and again you lead in that area. So those are how Porter suggested you could develop a competitive advantage. Now, there are a number of different other aspects related to strategic marketing action, such as your competitive positioning. If you're the market leader, then you would attack the market, try and create new uses and or users, increase frequency of use, for example. If you're a market challenger, which is second in the market, then you would attack the market leader by pricing or by new product attributes or by increases in advertising spend. If you're a follower, in other words, you're not the market leader or the second in the market, then you might avoid hostile attacks on rivals, but copy the market leader and provide good quality products that are well differentiated and focus on differentiation and profits rather than market share. If you're a market nicher, which means you're a relatively small player in the market, then you provide a high level of specialisation, perhaps by geography or proposition or service or customer group, and try and tightly meet market needs. Now, in developing strategic marketing, you've also got to take account of how it's implemented. And we do that really by looking at the type and structure of organisation, the organisation's culture, the available financial resources, and the available and the marketing metrics that we would use to evaluate whether we're meeting our objectives. I want to talk about marketing metrics. The different types of marketing metrics, we call them key performance indicators. These are helpful in marketing because the more we are able to determine whether our marketing activity is successful, effective or not, the more successful we'll be as marketers, but also the better the company does. So the kind of key performance indicators that are often used are things like sales, value and volume, how much we're selling by value and volume. What's our gross margin? How much are we earning on this? How aware of our customers of what we're selling? What's our market share like in different markets? What is the number of new products that we're developing as a proportion of the entire range, say in the last 3 years? What's the relative price? In other words, how much are we charging compared to the market leader, or if we're the market leader compared to the nearest competitor? Relative price is quite important. Notice it's not price, it's relative price. And relative price of one or more means you're charging the most. Now, that could be a bad thing. If you're charging the most but you're not very good and nobody likes you and nobody's buying from you, then that's obviously terrible. But if you're charging the most and you're doing very well, then that is actually a way of building brand equity and brand, hugely important. How satisfied are customers with you? Customer satisfaction, customer advocacy. There's an important metric called the Net Promoter Score, very widely used these days, which asks you on a scale of 1 to 10 how likely you are to refer a company or a product to others. How and another metric is how widely distributed your products or service is, and finally profit and profitability as the ultimate marketing metric, really. The final thing I want to talk about briefly is the key activities within the marketing plan, which are the executive summary, the overall objectives that the plan has. You know, what is it that you're trying to achieve? What is the product and market background? What's the market analysis that's being undertaken? That's where you'd have the SWOT analyses, for example. The marketing strategies, that's where you'd outline the ANSOS matrix and the different strategies that you've developed in each of those four quadrants of product market penetration, product development, market development and diversification. The marketing goals, how you're achieving competitive advantage and so on. The marketing programs, which is really an outline of your marketing mix for each target segment. And then the implementation plan, so the way in which the marketing plan will be controlled and evaluated, the financial scope of the plan, and operational evaluate implication in terms of human resources, R&D, and system and process needs, and so on. And then finally, you'd have supporting documentation, which outlines things like a full pest loss, SWOT analysis, and so on. Thanks for listening.